Warning. Critique Revolve contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
You have no idea what's coming.
Mr. Witt broke the rules. I trust you understand the repercussions if he survives.
John Wick, excommunicado, is now in effect.
You shouldn't be here. Nice suit.
Good to see you too. I need your help.
After this, we are less than even.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to Rain Man Digital. This is Brian bringing you another episode of Critique Revolve. In the studio with me today is my favorite review co-host, fucking Mike. That's Thomas, guys. That's Thomas. And yeah, I'm always aggressive. You know that. It's a late night. We just watched a super aggressive movie. And I want to stab things in the head.
Is that because of the movie?
Or
is that just like it inspired you? Or is that what they have to listen and find out?
Six of one, half a dozen of the other, dude. Two hands in the bush is worth two.
Whoa.
Of the
two hands in the where now?
All right, guys. So tonight, Thomas and I went and saw John Wick 3, Parabellum.
Ooh. That sounds dirty.
It really does. Like, it's like John Wick Chapter 3, Parabellum.
It sounds like you're talking about like a piece of like his, like a part of his body.
Like his taint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
John Wick's Parabellum. You're like, whoa.
You see everything in this movie, including his parabellum.
Yeah.
And it's like, bow, chicka, bow, bow. That's the intro music. Also, dude, how weird was the intro to this movie?
Well, see, it just started.
Yeah, it was odd. So anyway, so guys, it's coming out May 17th. It's an R rating, of course. It's a John Wick movie, and it clocks in at 2 hours and 10 minutes. Synopsis is as follows. Super assassin John Wick is on the run after killing a member of the International Assassins Guild, and with a $14 million price tag on his head. He is the target of hit men and women everywhere.
So the nice thing about this one is that it does pick up immediately after.
Hold on.
Hmm.
Hitman is a profession.
Right.
Hit is not the profession. So you wouldn't call it a hit woman.
Well, no, that's illegal.
Oh, that was quick.
It's
I like
funny
it.
How they do that. Like, it's like hitman and women.
Well, that's what I mean.
Completely like, missing like, the point. Yeah, like, that's actor, actress is now just actor.
Sure.
So, but like now they've gone backwards on this one to say it's not just hitman, it's hitman and women.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, that's so it's a ridiculous thing to say.
Pick one.
Right? Like, it's like the PC-ness is so stupid.
For a movie about a guy who literally just kills anything that moves.
Well, only if they hurt his dog.
That's not true anymore.
Well, no, not anymore.
Right.
Number two kind of fucked that up, didn't it?
Right.
All right. So anyways, guys, we went and saw John Wick 3 tonight. And as Thomas and I said earlier, it does just go straight into the movie. And it does pick off immediately, like literally.
Not even.
No, it's like, so you guys remember in John Wick 2, let's do the backstory here. So John Wick 1, we're going to run through this real quick. John Wick 1. Dude's got a dead wife, has a super awesome car, has a puppy given to him by the wife. Dead wife. Russian
punk
gangster
douche.
Punk kid comes in to steal car and murders dog, right? Which is fucked up. And you know immediately that dude is gonna die. He killed a dog. You don't get to kill a dog.
And the rest of the movie is that.
Is just John Wick killing people because his puppy died. Which is fine.
I'm
okay with that.
It was strange because it's such a simple concept on paper that's like a post-it note.
No, right,
but
really.
It did a great job of aligning the audience immediately with John Wick's point of view. So everything he did from that second on is completely justified.
Right. It's like
it's manipulation by no.
Oh, absolutely. There's no other word for it. It's absolutely manipulation. It's manipulation of the audience. But you know what? What else do you go to a movie for?
Yeah. And so we were like, yeah, kill everyone.
Right, exactly. Oh, they killed your dog that was given to you by your dead wife so that you would still have a shred of humanity left, you psychotic killer? Oh, yeah, fuck them up, John. Fuck them up. And you were all for it.
And it turns out he's the greatest assassin ever that this kid pissed off. And that was the great bit from the trailer.
Right.
It's like, it's not what you did, son. It's who you did it to.
Right.
So it had this, like, James Bond on steroids vibe. It was
kind of like a more personal equilibrium, or not equilibrium, equalizer, or more personal Crank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, right? Because, like, it had, like, that frenetic pacing of Crank and all of that, and...
You just had the sensation he's going to fuck everyone up, and you're totally cool with it.
Yeah, and you just don't care. Like, you're totally fine with the fact that he's just murdering, you know, everyone in a bathhouse. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, until he gets the guy that killed the dog, you don't care what he does.
Right.
Right? And then once he does get the guy with the dog, you still don't care what he does. Right? So then you get to John Wick 2, right? Where now he has to, there's consequences for what he did. Well, no, that was just the beginning of John Wick 2 was the car back.
True.
Because then the actual plot of John Wick 2 was, now that he's quote unquote back in the game, he's got skin in the game again, the guy who had a marker calls in the marker, and now John has to try to kill some chick so that this dude can take over his seat, her seat.
It's your standard betrayal.
It's your standard betrayal, right?
The big thing with the second one is that it expanded the world. We learned much more about how the Assassin Guild works and the rules and what can and cannot be done, and the fact that he breaks those rules is what sets a
bounty on his head. We're getting there. So then in the second one, he, and of course this is all spoilers, guys, but, like, fuck you, it's been years.
If you haven't seen the first two, why are you listening to the review?
Exactly. So he kills, well, actually, you know what, if you're listening to the third one and you haven't seen the first two, now you don't need to see the first two, because I'm just going to explain it all to you very, very quickly. So he kills the chick who turns out to be the sister of the dude who called in the marker. Then the dude that called in the marker has to cut all ties so that nobody knows he's the one that had the sister killed. So now he's got to kill John Wick because no loose ends. So now John Wick is in a fight for his life with this dude, right? So John Wick winds up...
Oh my God, slow down on the speed.
No. John Wick winds up killing the dude, but he does it in a place where no business is to be conducted. And that then sets up the third movie, where John is now on the run with a 1 hour head start. Mm-hmm. And that 1 hour head start matters a shitload for this entire plot of number three. That literally the entire, like, all of the true danger in the movie is based on that 1 hour head start.
So this one is, so the director for all three movies, and you're going to help me with the name, because I butcher names, as everyone on this network knows.
Chad Stahelski?
Right. He's the director for all three, but the first one also had David Lettich with him as a director.
Co-director, yeah.
Chapters 2 and 3 is just Chad Stahelski. The writer has been Derek Kolstad throughout all three movies, but this one is the first two was just Derek.
Right. Well, and Derek is also the creator of the characters.
Right. But as we get to the third one is when we start to see some issues, because it has four total writing credits.
Including Kolstad, you've got Shay Hatton, Chris Collins, and Mark Abrams.
And then we also have, the four right there. And anybody who's been listening to this or is plugged into the movie world at all knows the larger the number of screenwriters, the more problems you probably are going to have.
No, it's absolutely true, because you figure if it's one person's vision throughout all of it,
it's consistent.
It's consistent.
Clean.
And it was considered polished enough to turn into a movie.
It's done.
Right. It was done when he handed in the screenplay. Yes. Now, if you have a second writer, sometimes that's just a partner. They're just, you know, tightening up some dialogue or doing some revisions. Like, not a huge, huge thing. When you get a third person in, unless it's like two and three are partners, right? Like, then
three is usually a bad sign.
Right. Three. I understand.
Because it's like one guy who wrote it, another guy who had
some punch up,
who was brought in to fix things.
Yeah.
And a third one, because they still weren't happy with it. And producers have started to put their dick in it.
Right. And now you get to a fourth writer.
It's a
clusterfuck, because you had it's kind of like that game of telephone.
Yeah. That's a good way. That's a good example.
Because the original person had an idea and he had a vision for what he wanted to put on the paper, and he put it on the paper.
Right.
Then the second person read it and went, I can make it better. And then he, muffs it up.
And rarely is that the case on a second or third movie. if there's multiple writers on the first movie and it turns out all right, is that somebody had a good idea and someone else polished it.
Right.
If it's the first two or the first installment is one person, and by the final installment you've got a handful of writers, it's that something went drastically off the rails.
Right.
They were able to do it before. So what happened now?
Yeah, and so you got to figure with the John Wick franchise, you've got the same director, which is always honestly a good sign.
Yes,
it always is. A good sign when you have one person directing everything in a series, unless it's like complete schlock.
Well, unless it's bad from the get-go, but yeah.
Right. So that's always a good sign. But when you have all of these extra writers, what that means is that they either wanted it bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and someone pushed back and got fired.
Right.
Or someone wanted it too big, and the studio says, no, smaller, 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 and somebody pushed back and got fired. Like, that, it's always somebody pushed back and got fired.
Yeah, and the main point is that it's not exactly a good sign. And it's not to say that, you know, the first John Wick was this masterwork of literary genius. It's not. It was very simple, but I think that was its strength.
Right.
John Wick's strength came from two things primarily. The simplicity of the plot with the manipulation of how quickly you got everyone who's ever seen it,
well, it takes on 8 minutes, your side. Dude. It's like Up.
Yeah. Or additionally, the fact that when it came out, the first one was, I think, 2014.
Yes, 2014.
We had had a plague, and I use that term accurately, a plague of PG-13 bad action movies where the camera was very jittery, it was very up close, well, punches didn't quite hit, there was fast cuts.
What you had was, you had the Bourne series.
That started the endemic. Well,
the first Bourne was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second Bourne kind of had, like, it's that Russian filmmaker freneticism, mm-hmm. right? That you get with all the fast cuts, and you see a lot in Japanese cinema and
But what Bourne did right, other hacks copied and failed.
Right.
And that started becoming a very, very serious problem with action movies. You couldn't get away from it. John Wick in 2014 was so different for so many people watching it because it was pulled back.
Well, we talked about that actually on the show.
It was so well choreographed. Yep. You could see every bit of action.
Well, and part of that came from the director, of course, mm-hmm. is a stunt coordinator and a second unit director for a lot of the bigger stunt heavy movies like Captain America, Winter Soldier and stuff like that.
Which also has great action sequences.
Well, exactly. And so, and what we said when we watched the first John Wick, I believe that was you and me, right?
Been a while, maybe. But
yeah, I think it was. When we saw the first one was, oh my God, they did action right.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember just that's what blew us away more than anything was that they did the action right. And we had, like you said, there was this gluttony of just shitty action movies,
mm-hmm.
of these movies where you're watching them and you hate them. Like,
well, it's like, I think our guy's winning.
Right.
And it was only when the fight was over did you know what happened.
Right. And so that was what John Wick did was they took very simple concept that revenge and justified homicide.
Yeah. And, that's what it was.
Yeah. And they kind of, you know, they gave you that and they gave you a reason to care about the main character that was outside of the norm.
Well, the thing is, too, it reminded me very much of Jackie Chan's movies.
Right.
Where it was well choreographed. The fighting was fun to watch. It wasn't just there for action page fill.
Right.
It was creative. And where Jackie Chan was creative, realistic, and often funny, John Wick's was creative, realistic, and logical. Where James Bond or many other action heroes of this day, you'd say Jason Statham and The Rock, I guess, would fire off 1,000 rounds and have these choreographed things that were just kind of dumb and take way too many shots. And even James Bond would kind of frankly fuck around. What was impressive and terrifying about John Wick was he knew how many bullets were in his clip and he didn't miss, and he hit everyone headshot, knee shot, headshot, and like he was a wave of death
right
in that first movie. And by the time he has cleared out a room of 15 people and moved on to the next room, you're like, holy shit, did you see that third guy he killed? And your brain was still processing it.
Right. No, and that's exactly right, where they, instead of doing the frenetic camera work, it was just good, clean shooting.
clean. That's a good way. Yeah, it was the word.
It was clean, but not polished. And that's what we talked about.
Right.
And I'm remembering our conversation now. We talked about it being clean and not polished. And that was one of those things that made John Wick so different than everything else we had seen up until that point. And then you get into John Wick 2 and it loses some of the polish.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not as clean. It's a little bit dirtier movie, which is fine. That's the direction they wanted to go with it. And I know I reviewed that one with Lauren from the DC on CW crew. And, you know, her and I were fine with it, I believe. I want to say that we said, you know, go see it. If you like the first one, you'll like mm-hmm. it. You know, it's not the first movie, and it's not. John Wick 2 is not John Wick. John Wick is a far superior film. But John Wick 2 is okay. It's less about revenge, and it's more about kind of honoring honoring like your
commitments.
Commitments. Yeah, I guess.
That's kind of what it was.
Yeah, but it's more about like
your code of honor.
Well, yeah, you're getting to know like that John Wick is a man of his word.
Right.
Right. Like you're getting to know more about John Wick in that movie just from his actions. Right. And then it comes down to the end of it, and like, you know, you realize that Wick doesn't necessarily believe he's above the rules, but he is willing to break the rules if he deems it unfair.
Right. He's kind of like the assassin's punisher.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I know what I'm doing is right, so fuck you.
Right.
Exactly. To the cops kind of thing.
Exactly. And in this case, of course, there are no real policemen. There's just the Assassin's Guild and their weird, convoluted, old school rules. So that's kind of where we're at here. Going into John Wick 3, Wick's on the run. He is, there's a huge bounty on his head.
$14 million
at the very beginning. Yeah. And so, and Ian McShane, of course, has kicked him out of the guild for breaking the rules.
Mm-hmm.
So we get to the third movie. And of course, the third movie, the lineup of actors and actresses in this movie is fantastic. You've got Keanu Reeves, of course, Ian McShane, but then they bring in, and Lawrence Fishburne comes back.
Halle Berry.
But they bring in Halle Berry. They bring in Angelica Houston. Mm-hmm. I was fucking right, dude.
Yep.
She didn't look like Angelica Houston.
No, she didn't.
Like, she really didn't. And then you get, and Lance Reddick, of course, comes back. And then you get some new faces. You get, Jerome Flynn.
Asia Kate Dillon.
Yeah, thank you. Asia Kate Dillon, Mark Dacascos mm-hmm. from Double Dragon fame.
Right. those are probably the biggest additions.
Those are the biggest additions, I would definitely say, to the cast of mm-hmm. characters. And of course, those are all people that you're going to recognize.
Right.
And that's the big thing. I think that, you know, the first movie, there weren't a whole lot of people that you recognize. Like, you'd be like, oh, I think I've seen that dude before. Maybe. Right. I don't know. Same thing in the second movie, aside from McShane and Reeves and Lance Reddick. And, you know, so.
This one definitely kind of went bigger.
It did. It absolutely went bigger. You could tell that there was a bigger budget.
Mm-hmm.
You could tell that they went super heavy on a lot of things in this movie. Dialogue from Keanu, not one of them. you know, and the thing is, like, what I will say is nice is that, you know, with this third installment, you do have the same general feel that you had from the first two movies.
You do.
I think the color palette, the lighting,
that neo-noir vibe.
Almost like a dirty version of The Spirit.
Yeah. It feels like this is the world in which Blade Runner would eventually become.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I like that.
The colors, the palette, the lack of police.
Right?
Nonstop violence.
It's exactly like at any moment you could see Ryan Reynolds walking out, or not Ryan Reynolds, Ryan
Gosling
walking out in a trench coat.
Yeah.
Going, have you seen the robot? Have you
seen John Wick?
Yeah, like, yeah,
oh,
exactly.
Shit, crossover.
This, oh, shit, it's getting real now.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, and so, you know, the movie, it goes right into the action.
Yeah.
You know, it immediately kicks off. Like we said, John's running. Mm-hmm. And of course, you do see his dog. And as you would expect, John does the dog right.
Yeah.
You know, he does the dog right. But, you know, and it's an interesting thing where they build upon this world once again. The first movie, very, very localized.
Very tight, very focused.
Second movie, regional.
Expanded upon.
But it's still regional.
Still contained.
Still New York.
Yeah.
Right? Third movie, we didn't just go, you know, national.
Mm-hmm.
We went international.
And that's one of those things that I feel like is a bad sign.
And I actually agree with you there. I think that they're forcing expansion.
When there's,
it's not necessary.
I don't have the list in front of me right now, but you can almost, but I know people will know what I'm talking about. Oftentimes a sign of a bad sequel is when you have a significant location change being a primary selling point. Van Wilder, you know, London and like things like that, that they would do in the 2000s. Like,
oh, you mean like, so you
Harold and Kumar in Escape Guantanamo, or get like, it? That's or like, the whole like thing.
Road Trip and European Trip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
National Lampoon's Vacation, Las Vegas. Like, it's when the locale is a selling point. That might have been a thing in the 80s.
The Hangover and the 3. 70s,
when it was like, oh, wow, I haven't seen that part of the world. Now we're so interconnected with the internet, it's not a thing anymore.
Right.
But it is still kind of a bad sign because they, and this is kind of where I'm getting to what I feel about the movie, a little premature perhaps, but
Thomas, John, I wouldn't have it any other way.
John Wick 3 Parabellum, which, if you know Latin, is a spoiler. Ha ha ha. It goes what it does, what most series do by the third one. The first one's tight, focused, strong narrative. You feel for the characters and you'd love to know more. The second one does a bit of expansion on the world, starts to lose some of those things by expanding the world because they didn't really think about making a sequel when they made the first one very clearly.
I think you're
with
right.
A cliffhanger ending.
So what you,
and then the third one is it's bigger, it's better, and it's dumber than before.
So what you have here is Fast and Furious, Fast and Furious 2, Tokyo Drift doesn't exist. And what was the
two?
No,
just Fast and Furious again.
Yeah. And then just, yeah, it was the Fast, the Furious, Fast and the Furious.
Right.
Then Too Fast, Too Furious. Tokyo Drift doesn't exist. And then
Fast
and Furious. And that's exactly what they did. You had the first movie that was tight. You cared about the characters, even the bad guys you cared about. Then the second movie.
My reference, Pirates of the Caribbean.
I refuse to
we're
use
doing
that.
It.
No.
We're doing
no,
it.
No. I refuse
you,
to use
you
that
have
as
me
a
on this show,
fucking reference.
It.
Every
it's
goddamn
true.
Time we do a show.
Good you, movies can always be used. The
name
first
a
one.
Good movie, and I will agree with you, you fuck. I will never admit anything good about the Pirates of the Caribbean
well,
movies.
Well, then you're just a liar.
I hate them.
Batman as well. Batman Begins, Dark Knight. Cliffhanger ending,
yeah,
you know,
no,
and
no,
then
no,
Dark
and you're right,
Knight
you're
Rises.
Right. But no, but it's Fast and Furious, Too Fast, Too Furious, and then Fast and Furious again. It goes from small to a little bit bigger, right? Because we've...
Cliffhanger ending.
Right, and you bring in the black guy, Tyrese, and then three, we're superheroes. Like,
yeah.
What the fuck just happened?
And I think that's the thing, is that John Wick's biggest strength, like I said before... was beyond the manipulation of the narrative was that
it was
realistic and you're like, holy fuck, this guy's amazing at this job.
It was and the equalizer, dude.
He's John Wick. That's what he was. He, in one movie, he made himself synonymous with James Bond.
Right.
What the fuck does that say about how well done that movie was?
Well, and a movie that didn't do well at the box office.
Right.
And yet people fucking loved it.
And then by the time we get to the third one, he is a victim of his own success. He is too big to fail. He goes beyond and now he cannot be defeated and the laws of physics stop for him.
Well, he's fucking bulletproof.
He's
dude.
Bulletproof. He can survive falls from great heights. He gets stabbed and hits an artery but doesn't do any damage to him significantly because that's how blood loss works. And he becomes a god. And it went from John Wick as this realistic, terrifying Baba Yaga boogeyman assassin in the first one to Jason Statham.
So essentially the first one, he was the, like you said, he was Baba Yaga. He was the
force
boogeyman.
Of death.
Well, he was folklore.
Yeah.
He was folklore.
Legendary.
And then he came back.
You're like, fuck.
And that was what pulled you in. Mm-hmm. And then in the second one, he's still there, but he loses some of that Baba Yaga shit.
And he also becomes a little bit less when we realize how many assassins there are.
Right. And how, like, they're all really good.
Ubiquitous.
Right.
You know,
it's like Bourne mm-hmm. when you realize that there were 700 Bourne people.
And that's a problem with an ever expanding world in which you've only planned the first one.
Or actually the Hitman franchise.
Well, yeah.
I think that's another one. Like if they ever would make a second movie that
well,
is a sequel.
Let's talk about the games. They're much better. But
well, that's what I mean though. Like, yeah. Remember the first Hitman game?
Yeah.
Where you don't know that there are, you know, a couple hundred of them.
Right.
And you're playing the game and you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. I'm so, oh, this guy's fucking great. Look what he did. Oh, he fucking, wow. And then you get to like the fifth game and you're like, what the fuck, man?
And that's,
now all I fight are other hitmen?
And that's a shame because that's what happened here. He went from this ghost in the night legend
right.
to, okay, well, the world is so much bigger and a bigger world makes our character either A, smaller, or B, they have to be ridiculous for them to be that big.
You have to up the power level.
And they're, and then they become something else.
Right. It's the Superman complex. It's yeah. the, it's the, which came first, the villains or the superheroes. It's all the same shit.
And that's really disappointing with this one.
It really is. And I will say this, guys, like, I know Thomas is pretty down on this movie.
I am. Yes.
He is,
but.
He is, but I will say this. If you liked the first movie, just to get this out of the way, if you love the first movie, if you like the second movie, the third movie's fine. It's fine. It's the third installment in a series.
It's like, not going to be better than the other two you've already seen.
No.
But if you like the other two, you'll enjoy watching this one.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with this one. I will say the one serious drawback for me for this movie, because you know I'm not into all of like a ton of gore. And this movie doesn't have a ton of gore, really. Mm-mm. It's not like people are getting ripped in half. There's a lot of blood splurt and splatter that doesn't really look real, to be honest with you. It's very CG. It wasn't.
I didn't feel like it was that bad.
There was a couple, dude.
There's a couple times.
If the lighting had been a little bit better.
If the lighting was brighter, it would have been a problem.
It would
but
have
that's
been,
why you color grade.
Right,
that's,
yeah, exactly. And that's why the movie's so dark. Mm-hmm. But no, the one thing that did bug me about this movie was that John Wick has a higher death count than Thanos. And I'm talking about in Infinity War where he snaps his fingers and half of everyone dies. Because what this movie did and what they did with this is they literally made the universe nothing but assassins and no innocent bystanders.
If you ever see in John Wick's universe a person that doesn't have the dad bod or look like they enjoy Cheetos, they're an assassin.
Yeah, no, like
because anybody of physical shape that can run a half mile, they're an assassin.
Right, or a woman.
Everybody.
Oh, actually, no, only Asian women.
Well, frankly, we're not the one in this network to ever worry about social justice or representation
no.
Things like that.
I don't care about
but
representation.
Holy fuck, was this Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Shredder's clan with how many Asian people were ninja villains?
Right, and it's not like this took place in China.
It's fucking New York. It's not even like the Chinese district.
No, it wasn't even. Well, there was the one scene in Chinatown.
There's like one in the beginning, not the rest of the movie.
Well, I mean, that is where he ran through. And so much like the Pied Piper, they all followed. There's just, you know, the Chinese people are lemmings. I don't. Good God,
it's
man.
Not
stop
a, it's,
me.
Stop talking. So that's where, and that's the thing is that it starts to get a little bit lazy. And that's the saddest thing is that the first John Wick was so well thought out, so well choreographed.
Right.
And even the second one had better moments like that.
It did.
And this third one has a couple scenes. Primarily, there's one, and you'll know which one, scene in the beginning.
That's amazing.
That's fucking great to watch.
Yeah.
And it has that realistic element. Like, you know what? If I did throw a knife like that, that would happen.
Well, and I was going to say, it's not the scene with your favorite basketball player, Boban Marjanovic.
No,
it's not that scene. Although I will say this, dude, the way that, cause the dude's like 7'8",
mm-hmm.
right? Or 7'6".
Something
or
ridiculous.
He's 7'2", 7'3". And they made him look 10 fucking
feet
tall.
Yeah, he's like
tall.
10 feet tall. In
it's, I mean, it's amazing the way the angles that they used mm-hmm. to shoot it were genius.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's the same way they shot Andre the Giant.
Right.
Like, and.
But that's the thing is like, we have these,
There's these moments.
Crazy.
But see, here's the thing. There's these moments where you can see good filmmaking.
Yes.
And you know that the director is capable.
Because he did it before.
With the first movie and with some of the second unit stuff on, you know.
The second one.
On Civil War and the other stuff that he's done. And so you know he is capable of shooting a pretty movie. Or a movie that at least is realistic looking and interesting. It's like he forgot.
And
the fight scenes in this movie, okay, so the
sadly disappoint. Except
well,
for the beginning,
there's a couple scenes.
It gets worse as the movie goes on,
right? And what it is it's almost like they had to hit a 2-hour runtime, and so every fight scene lasts about 5 minutes longer than you want it to, and it's just the same fight and the same flip over the shoulder, hit in the face,
shoot in the head,
leave him, and then hit the other guy. leave him. The other guy's now gotten back up.
And that was the thing, is that
in the first movie, if two guys came at him, two fucking guys came at him, and he still took them both down. In this movie, they do the
I'm going to wait to fight.
Well, it's the time-honored tradition of, well, there's only one good guy, so only one bad guy can fight him at a time. The rest of you stand in a circle and wait.
And that's the thing, is that in the first movie, watching it was an experience. You're like, holy fuck, this is so well choreographed. He just took them all out in a believable way.
Right.
And by the third one, it's another Jason – I hate to shit on the man because I love the guy.
Right.
But it's another Jason Statham action movie.
Well, it's those 80s.
They attack individually.
It's the 80s action movie.
They miss every shot when it comes to that guy, but they can dead-eye anybody else that shows up on the scene.
It's legitimately like watching any Wesley Snipes or – Jean-Claude Van Damme.
The 80s, 90s action movies are back.
The Bruce Willis movies. Like, it's the same schlock. It's the same schlock.
The thing is, even those movies, John Wick has fallen victim to the same thing that those movies did. Think of Die Hard. Think of First Blood, Rambo. The first one is this tight, believable, yes, realistic, based on the proportional situation they're in and what they are painted to be. This, at least in Rambo, this legendary fighter, and in Die Hard, realistic logic is played, and we'll get into that with spoilers.
Right.
Logic plays a huge factor into how this series of events unfold. And then by the third installment, they're a superhero.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. Well, they're either a superhero or they're so OP, they're fucking Goku.
They're just,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you guys understand that Goku, sorry. but yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, like you said, it's you have to keep upping the stakes.
Mm-hmm.
And to up the stakes in a movie like this, you have very few options.
And the thing is, it just went for the options were more detailed, more thought out. Because John Wick 2 had this really elaborate car scene in the very beginning.
It was a very elaborate plot. Like, it was a very, like,
surprisingly thought out.
Yeah, it really was. And that's the thing that, like, got me about John Wick 2 I know in the review I complained,
mm-hmm,
about pacing and some of that. Because
it's got 40 minutes of kind of waiting for shit to
happen. In the middle. Yeah, the part that you stopped watching it at.
Yeah.
And but no, I mean, there are some issues with John Wick 2, of course. But there is a plot that is quasi-believable. Like, I mean, it's
believable for the world they've established.
Right, because, I mean, he goes to Italy and he, like, does shit there. Mm-hmm. And, like, there's a thing. And, like, they kind of expanded internationally, but not really. Because it was kind of like he went back home to, like, the original Assassin's Guild. Because for whatever reason, any Assassin's Guild has to come from Italy.
Yeah.
It's always the mob, dude. It's, oh, think about it. Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
Fucking every assassin movie ever, that's where they come from, right?
Yeah.
But that's fine. I don't give a shit. Whatever. And then this one, of course, throws in the curveball of the Middle East, which is fine.
Well, that's the thing, is it went that regional. Now let's go here, and let's go here, and let's go here for a five-minute scene. And that'll be more involved in spoilers.
Right. We'll talk about that more in spoilers.
It doesn't break, but it expands its logic to a point that you're like, okay, this is just kind of silly now. And now I have more questions than I have answers in any way. So I don't know what to do with that. And the thing is, the biggest part of it is that it went bigger, but it didn't put the same effort. Because the action sequence are kind of lazy. We see the same move done again and again.
Again and again.
We look at how the cinematography or the music was done, or the lighting and the effects in the first movies.
Oh, okay.
I remember the whole nightclub spa scene, and that music, The Think is the name of the song, and mm-hmm, I was like, fuck, that song is like the nice beat to it. It was like this creepy ethereal, he's this ghost wandering the halls and he fucking murders these people.
I
remember moments that punch through.
Yeah.
And in this, I was just watching. The things I remember is the sound effects of and leather getting hit by the Foley artist to show that he got punched.
Yeah, no, I think there was a big difference between production.
It became too gray.
Well, the production value in the first movie was almost along the lines of, talk about Gosling again,
mm-hmm,
Drive.
Yeah.
Or the sequel, the quote-unquote non-sequel to Drive, that bombed, did horribly.
I don't know that one.
Oh, I can't, Dragon something or whatever.
Driving again, I don't know.
No. But anyway, that both of those movies had quality, mm-hmm, to the production value, and the music you could tell was very, like, they picked the song that they wanted. And even in the second movie, you got some of that. In this movie, man, they just said, fuck it.
I don't think there's a soundtrack.
There is.
There's like that.
But it's like for a 2 hour, 10 minute movie, their soundtrack is 14 minutes long.
There's that theme tonal music. Like the second that one of, not important, the bad guys turns on them and like the music goes, like it gets that like, oh no, there's a bad guy in the room.
Right.
That, you know what I'm talking about. Like, that undertone.
Well, it's that,
it's not music, but it's what that it is, ambience.
What it is, dude, is it's that. Like that's the noise. And it used to be.
Like, that ambient sound of like, oh no, this isn't upbeat and happy, but there's no music.
No, not really. Except
score
for
that punches through.
There is one scene where they make a huge deal about playing a record. And,
but even that doesn't exactly fit, nor is it like something like Baby Driver where it's thought out and the music is a dance that we see the action move to.
Or even
it's just there.
Or even like The Matrix. To talk about like a Keanu movie. That where, you know, where they walk into the big building and like that music like what was it? Was that Prodigy?
I don't remember. It's been years.
Either way.
But remember, think of Thomas Jane in The Punisher.
Right.
So the thing is, Italian opera music, and we see everything is perfectly timed to it.
Here's the thing, guys.
We don't have that.
When you're making a movie, there are a couple things that are super, super integral to the experience that the audience has. Sound effects is one, right? Because if you have no sound effects,
it's just weird.
It doesn't, you won't know what's wrong.
Yeah.
As a regular person, you'll be watching a movie going, something doesn't feel right. It's because you don't hear anything that that your eyes are seeing.
Right.
Right. But with that goes hand in hand is the music, the score, or the actual music, like the score or the
soundtrack.
The soundtrack. Thank you. Soundtrack was the word I was
looking for. Yeah.
Either way, like those things are super fucking important for A, like believability, and B, to combat boredom.
Well, that's the thing is like, I think of some of the other great action movies ever, and either the action is so well done and there's intensity to the music, or the music score punches through. Think of Indiana Jones. Think of Star Wars.
Fuck it, dude. Think of Deadpool and Deadpool 2.
Like any of them had music and it fits it. And this just feels like somebody like toned it way down, cranked the Foley artist way up.
Well, and you also had just strange sound mixing in general, I think. On this movie, there's one character whose voice is gotta be
shockingly loud.
Well, in like bizarre ways, though. Not like she's yelling, just like it's like
four decibels higher than everyone else in the room.
Like if John Wick speaks at a 3, her normal voice is a 19. Like it's that high.
It's odd.
It is. It's weird. And it's jarring because it's one of those things where, like, you know how like they say people don't set like, oh, you don't look like how you sound.
You know that friend that doesn't know how to whisper?
You mean me?
Yes. That's what it is.
Yeah, it's me.
It's like everyone else is talking at a room volume, and you have to come in and talk like this. And you're like, Jesus Christ, dude. I'm 5 fucking inches away from you. There's one moment where that character leans into somebody and then basically yells at them. And I'm like, why are you yelling?
Well, it's you know, it's that whole thing where, you know, normal human beings know how to whisper and talk at a normal volume.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's people like me who had never learned that.
Yeah.
My whisper is your normal voice.
So,
So it's just odd though, because I don't necessarily think that that's how that actress talks in general.
It's like she's trying to be this authoritarian,
but it's weird.
And the director didn't know how to bring that across other than be louder than everyone else.
Well, and it's like loud and like emotion-esque, because it's not emotionless. She is incapable of being emotionless.
Yeah.
Kristen Stewart does it better.
Well,
which is probably the only thing Kristen Stewart does better. That and Hot. But anyway.
Oh, wow.
Did I say that out loud?
Yeah.
Sorry.
So it's odd, guys. If you liked John Wick 1, this one will disappoint, but it'll be fun. If you liked John Wick 2, this is kind of more the same, but still not quite as good. If it goes 8-9, then like 6-7, like this is like a 5-6.
So here's the thing, man. Here's the thing. If you are still going to the theater to see Fast and Furious movies, you'll love this.
Oh, you'll love it.
Yeah. If what? Okay. So the other thing that I want to touch on real quick before we get into spoilers, Thomas, you mentioned in the parking lot.
Yeah.
Before we left and to come to the studio, you made a comment about something that I told you 8 years ago about Idiocracy. being real.
Yeah.
And you in your still in college freshness.
Naivete.
Yeah, not being the jaded fuck that you are now. You were like, no, man. Idiocracy is not happening yet. I don't know what that voice is, bro.
Yeah,
that's what you sounded like.
Did you meet me when I was six?
No, dude. 7 years ago, that's how you sounded.
Uh-huh.
Before Randy started fucking you in the ass. And
good God.
Sorry, buddy. Couldn't help it. No. So anyway, so Thomas told me, you know, 7 years ago, he's like, no, man, idiocracy isn't. No, we're not there yet. We're not there yet. What'd you say today, Thomas?
Oh, we're there. We're fucking just living it.
So, guys,
that's a comment on the audience, though.
So, well, it is a comment on the audience, but it's also a comment on the movie itself.
It is.
Because here's the thing. You know, Thomas and I were talking about it, and the last true comedy that either of us could remember is
Tropic Thunder.
Tropic Thunder. Now, we did go see that Coen Brothers movie with Channing Tatum and the singing Romans.
Hail Caesar.
That was a comedy. But that was that was the 30s and 40s style comedy.
That was a
throwback.
Coen Brothers homage to the 50s.
Right.
Dark pseudo comedy.
Right. So it was weird.
It
wasn't a real comedy. Right.
Last time a laugh out loud, wow, this is going to do great at the box office comedy movie was Tropic Thunder 11 years ago.
Right. Because you had Meet the Parents before that.
Meet the Parents, Meet the Fockers, the whole bit.
Right. But Meet the
Wedding
Parents. Wedding Crashers was before that.
Pineapple Express was another one in 2008. You had things like Jim Carrey's Ace Ventura in the 90s and things that.
Yeah, you know, you had real comedy movies.
Movies.
And we don't get
Dodgeball
that anymore.
Dodgeball in 2004.
God, so good.
So fucking
good. But yeah, if you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
But we don't have that now.
Right,
and yet.
And yet, so what we see during this movie is there are moments where no response is necessary. It's not needed. They're not trying to elicit a response from the audience. They're not trying to elicit a laugh and a shocked fucking, you know, inhale of breath. Mm-hmm. They are literally doing nothing but walking into a room and the morons in the audience are laughing.
Not laughing.
No,
guffawing. Thank you.
Why? Yeah, no. And
what is that?
It was weird. It was super weird. And also, please, if you go to a movie, shower first.
That's just another comment on the
for the love of God, shower. And I don't mean fucking Navy shower. I mean actually water, soap, shampoo and conditioner if necessary.
Cracks and crevices, people.
And put on goddamn deodorant. Fuck.
Yeah.
I can't, you know, and
people are gross, man.
No, people are disgusting. And we're magic players, Thomas.
Yeah, that says a lot.
I went to 9 Grand Prix, which is the bastion of unwashed, filthy nerd. And yet the smell emanating from whatever troglodyte was in the fucking theater was far worse than anything I ever smelled at a magic tournament. And that's saying a lot because those things are 3 fucking days long.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway. So, guys, John Wick 3.
Yeah, I was going
to
say,
back to the movie. John Wick 3 is, you know, it's fine. It's exactly fine. It is
the third installment in an action franchise.
Exactly. And it actually is probably better than some third installments.
Mm-hmm.
I think the one exception would be what? The Mel Gibson shit. Danny Glover.
Die Hard? Or Lethal Weapon?
Yeah, Lethal Weapon 3 was okay. It wasn't great, but it was okay.
Ooh.
Come on, dude. I mean, Lethal Weapon 4 was better.
Ooh, okay, before you dig that hole any deeper.
Anyway, but
it's
the
third installment in an action series.
And so, yeah, it is. It's fine.
If you enjoyed the other two, you'll enjoy this.
Well, right. And if you're a fan of action movies and if you're a fan of, you know, blood and people getting fucking, you know, stabbed through the eye.
But I would say if you loved the first one and were disappointed by the second, it's not going to get better.
It doesn't get better, but it doesn't get worse. I don't think this was worse than the second movie. I really don't.
All right.
I don't think it was any worse.
I do, but
I know. Well, yeah, but you're a dick.
Right. So that's true.
That's fine.
Not much worse.
All right, guys. So at this point, I would say wait for it on DVD, but I said the same thing about the second movie. So
if you're interested, don't pay matinee price. No, or like, no, like the
pay evening, them out.
Pay the matinee price,
not the full price.
Yeah.
Or if
don't make this a $60 viewing experience.
Right. Don't take you and both kids either. Jesus. But yeah, so I mean, it's exactly fine. So I think that's going to do it for the regular show. We're going to do some spoiler work here second. So we'll be right back.
The Rain Man Show.
The Rain Man Show.
I'm sure Facebook memories have led, it's possibly led to many suicides at some point. I mean, if you ever want to just feel unfulfilled with your life, just pay attention to those memories. They will always make you feel great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remembering that 9 years ago, you had a promising future. And suddenly you realize you live within the shadow of your former self in both achievements and looks.
Where has it all gone wrong?
Hey, Mike, 10 years ago, you were much better looking. Thanks. Thanks, Facebook. I appreciate that. Something's got to be done about those memories, though.
It's annoying. I wish you could turn it.
It's not annoying. It's depressing, Thomas. You're not listening.
Mine are annoying. Yours are depressing.
I can wait till you're 40. Wait till you're 35, 36, and you saw, a photo. Hey, 9 years ago, Mike, you were producing a film. Thank you, Facebook. I know that. You would think they would also come out with an algorithm or come up with an algorithm and that also knows which are good memories and which are bad memories. They have to be more selective because they choose bad memories.
I think it's almost on purpose.
One of my friends from a film committed suicide about 12 years ago, and they reminded me as if it was a good memory. You remember Paul?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I'm like, yes, I do remember Paul.
For more Rain Man, visit rainmanshow.com.
All right, guys, we're back now for the spoiler section here on Critique Revolve. All right, Thomas, what do you got? You start.
So the problem that the third one has when it came to the narrative, because that's what I always harp on the most, is by making a bigger world, you expose more problems in your own logic. The fact that they explain how like the high table hierarchy works that was truly introduced in the second one undoes a lot of the logic from the first one and makes a lot of decisions people have made previously just dumb. And then, for example, if John Wick killing someone on the Continental property in the second one made him excommunicado to the point that 14 million was his bounty and the entire world, literally the entire world, is after him, why the fuck would some random chick in the first movie try to kill him on the Continental for a bounty of $4 million when it guarantees she's not living to spend a nickel?
Right.
They are this, as they made the world bigger, they decided to make the high table this Orwellian superpower. They are everywhere. They have eyes through everything.
They are everything.
Yet still incompetent. It felt like the Empire by the end. They are these stormtroopers who can't hit the broadside of a barn unless they need to.
Okay, so
who have battle armor that's perfect until it's not.
So here's the thing. I think in a story from story perspective,
yeah,
this movie logically would make far more sense. John Wick's on the run, right?
Mm-hmm.
The two people that have helped him before are now being threatened with death,
right?
If they don't step down from where they're at,
right?
Why on earth would you want to step down, right?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make any sense. Now, and all of these people know each other, right?
Right.
So my question is, you have 7 days. Why didn't the people at the Continental, people at the Bowery, team the fuck up?
And that's where I thought this
that's
was
where
going.
I thought it was going to.
The spoiler subtitle is Parabellum, which translates to prepare for war.
Right.
If this is setting up the fact that John Wick's alliances
right.
are now in just as much shit as he is, it logically made sense that with the time frame and his world jumping and needing a safe place because they are everywhere, you would have this sort of impromptu coup where these groups would band together and have this fight and take it to the high table.
Well, it's one of those
and make it this greater kind of throw logic out the window and have more fun with this pseudo fantasy esque comic book level fight.
Right. Which is what it is at this point. Like, I mean, you're literally talking about all of New York City trying to kill one man and failing miserably.
Yeah, shockingly.
Right? Yeah, like shockingly bad at killing him.
Like their tactical unit with bulletproof armor, and they don't.
Well, no, not just not.
They
just,
don't flank left the second they turn a corner, which is where he's hiding. Because like, of course he is.
Like, here's the thing, dude. They're not just. It's not just bulletproof armor.
It's God armor.
It's literally every piece of them is bulletproof.
From their hands to their goggles.
Like, literally everything. You can't kill them unless you can get a hand on the helmet to lift the helmet, because apparently they don't know what a turtleneck is.
Yeah.
Right? So anyway, so like, there's that shit. But no, the thing that would have made sense was for a team up, or for the ones that had helped him previously to continue helping
him. This fight
is my
fight now.
Right. It's one of those, the enemy of my enemy kind of things. Yes. Right. But they didn't do that.
I'm either dead or I help you, and I might be dead. Right. So I might as well help you.
Right.
It doesn't go that
way. It doesn't go that way. Like, even a little bit. Like, it's not even spoken of that could have gone that way.
And yet there's so much time spent on each one of these groups who helped him.
Right.
Four different individuals help him at some point. Five? Shit, yeah. Is it five?
Yeah, because
five,
the doctor.
You're right, the doctor. Five different people help him. None of it ultimately matters because of this one high table element that is so powerful yet can't take out a single guy when its entire job is a global assassin guild and you can't take out one guy?
Dude, it's the Bourne problem.
It's the thing. He's too good now.
It's the Bourne problem. It's the Hitman problem. It's all the same thing. Because if you look at any of those movies, or even The Recruit with fucking Colin Farrell.
Jesus.
Right? I mean, think about it. It was the same shit. You know, you have
the transporter. Like,
yeah, no. You have one guy that is just head and shoulders better. So much better than everyone else.
It's like he's a tenured mathematics professor. And everyone else is doing, you know, addition, subtraction.
Yeah, no, or even better, if you've ever played Neverwinter Nights or any of those games, there's a code that you can enter. Literally type in underscore God, and you can't die.
He no-clipped through all their lives.
Exactly.
He just
exactly
obliterates everyone.
No, and that's exactly right. And it doesn't make sense because in the first movie, there were stakes.
Yeah.
Like, he could be killed.
Could be killed. The bounty was reasonable-ish.
Right.
Assassins were few and far between.
So we thought.
We thought. Now, by making it so much bigger, the world is such a problem because everybody who moves is an assassin. $14 million, big chunk of change, but by today's standards...
Is it?
I don't know if it is for an assassin contract.
And what I don't
Maybe for one, but I'll do five others that's not John Wick.
Right.
And make that money in a year.
Right. Well, exactly. That's what I mean. Like, it doesn't completely make sense because and they had the board of contracts.
Mm-hmm.
There were at least two other contracts in the multi-million dollar area and a bunch at like $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
So if my choice is kill one John Wick or 28 dudes, I'm killing 28
I'll
dudes.
Kill 29.
It'll be easier.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing. It doesn't make sense. And like, if you're doing it, like, it made sense for the Asian dude because
he's like a fanatic
and he wanted to be
John
better
Wick.
He wanted to be John Wick. And then I believe it became, he wanted to be better than John Wick. He wanted to be respected by John Wick and he never got there.
No,
because there was a difference in philosophy between the two of them.
But even that is like a stapled on. And that's where I feel like one of the other four writers was like, well, I want to get this guy in.
Right.
It's like, well, it doesn't fit to any of the other narrative. It doesn't have any greater play.
Also,
doesn't have any relevance to anything. It's like, yeah, but let's spend 30 minutes on it.
I think the other thing that really, really bugged me about the movie was how often they tried to kill him with a knife.
There's a lot of knife fighting.
Just shoot him.
And the thing is, the best knife fighting is in the beginning.
Yeah.
So anything after that was completely pointless.
Well, and like, the other thing, dude, is he's not wearing a helmet.
Shoot him in the fucking head.
Like, fucking sniper it.
Like, that was at least in the first one.
Right. They had the sniper. There were no snipers. Like, I don't understand. A $14 million bounty.
And now everyone's just a knife fighter.
I'll take a pot shot with a fucking sniper rifle for $14 million from a mile away. Like, are you fucking kidding me?
The first one was tight on its logic, tight on its choreography, tight on its story. And by now it's expanded and bloated to where it just has things that don't make sense that just are there for spectacle.
Right.
Halle Berry's in it for all of maybe 10 minutes. Screen time, I'd say 3 minutes.
Because maybe five.
Because the rest of it is fight sequence, and it just goes on, like you said, about 5 minutes longer than it needs to.
And that's the other thing.
Doesn't add anything truly to the story, because all of that was to get to, spoilers, some elder guy.
Right.
The grandmaster who's above the table.
It wasn't even to get to the elder. It was
just to get to some other guy to get to the elder.
Some other guy. Like, there was just a lot of other guys. It was like a bad video game, man.
Yeah, you had to level up and fight the previous sub-boss to get to Bowser.
What I said to you during the extra 5 minutes of every fight scene was, it's like they're fucking farming in a video game.
They are. Where he has to level up.
Right, where it's like, okay, I need to get 15 kills to get the super special gun. Okay, I got 15 kills. Okay, now I need 32 kills to get the extra double super secret gun.
Well,
and it was just fucking ridiculous.
And then here's the other spoiler. It sets things up and, quote, raises the stakes with the Elder to then just immediately go back on the stakes. This guy
who's... To go right back to where they started. Who's,
if I believe, and this is where the world-building expansion is a problem, if I'm supposed to believe that there's this group called the High Table, a table of 12 people who... run the world as far as Assassin's Guild things go, which apparently is so ubiquitous that anybody who's in shape, anyone at an LA Fitness is a fucking assassin. But now I'm supposed to believe that, and I'm supposed to believe that there's some guy who controls all of that or is higher than all that in some sacred kind of pseudo-religious order.
I was going to say, here's the thing.
And all he is some 40-year-old dude in the desert.
He's a 38-year-old good-looking Iranian.
And that's
But no, I think
there's no logic to that.
You have the twelve disciples or apostles, whatever you
and
want to call
Jesus.
Them. And you have Jesus. And
so is it pseudo-religious? Where is that from?
Probably the third writer.
Yeah, because there's a cross and there's all these other things.
Yeah, there's a bunch of shit that
there,
goes on.
But aren't explained.
Yeah.
And if you're going to put the time in to build this world and show me all these things, then you should have some fucking explanation for some of it.
Well, and not only that, but you have Angelica Houston in it, who's a fantastic actress. And we see her for a total of 6 minutes.
Not even.
It's 6 minutes.
Because
we see her twice.
On that one.
We see her twice. And remember the first time she walks for a minute and a half.
That's true.
So you see her for about 6 minutes, right? But she's fantastic and she's underutilized. And once again, Ian McShane, I feel, is underutilized. And I swear to God, dude.
He needs a better agent.
If I see one more fucking movie where everybody's out doing shit and one guy sits smugly on a fucking couch drinking sherry, I'm gonna fucking kill somebody. I'm so tired of the trope, dude.
Yeah. Well, and then even Ian McShane, he's a great actor who's one of the best, like, narrative, like, his voice is great for exposition and being the powerhouse guy who knows more than you.
Right.
And then for the sake of shock, people that you're like, that guy's dead, aren't. And people who you're like, he's our buddy, we can trust him, aren't.
Right.
And all of it is simply to set up a sequel.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I don't agree with the ending of this movie at all.
In the slightest.
It doesn't make any sense.
It's out of nowhere.
It literally doesn't make sense.
And again, it breaks its own rules.
It's actually out of character.
It's out of character from A, the previous two movies, and B, what happens in this movie?
Right.
What happens in this new movie? A character says, yeah, what if I said fuck that and was someone completely different?
Yeah.
For the sake of setting up a fourth one.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing is, all it would have taken is tweaking and having him be in on it.
Right.
And that would have solved
the
problem.
Which is what we thought.
We were setting up this grand prepare for war. If everyone's been betrayed by the High Table and they all set up a prepare for war, I'd be kind of excited for the fourth one.
But that's not what happened.
And now they just kind of reset to give us a different villain because once again, like with Game of Thrones lately, like with The Last Jedi, like with Pet Sematary, like with so many narrative experiences this recently, they're subverting our expectations. But by throwing out all narrative logic, sense, characterization, and reason as to why they would do it.
Right.
Because you wouldn't see it coming if there's no fucking reason for it to happen.
And that's the whole thing. Is like, look, the M. Night Shyamalan ending, the Sixth Sense, all the surprise endings. Fucking worked
if they're well done
because they made sense even though you didn't expect it. It was out of left field but still logical.
Where you look back and you're like, fuck, I should have seen that coming.
Exactly. What we get now is, oh, this is where they're going.
Wait, let's do a hard 180 and do the opposite.
Why would they do what? That doesn't make sense, and that angers me.
Because
I'm not dumb.
Yeah,
I'm not dumb.
But it makes you feel dumb. Because there's no way you could have seen it coming.
No.
And it truthfully just shows how bad the writing is, because you literally pulled this out of your ass just for it to happen.
Well, it's like, okay, so here's the movie. And then somebody goes, do the opposite of that at the very, very end for no reason.
But we've set up characterization and doesn't matter. Natural
stop,
arc of
stop,
a
stop. Do what I said. Or we'll replace
you. Put your dick in it, or I'll put mine in you.
Right.
And you're like, whoa.
Whoa, okay. Harvey, calm down, buddy.
Jesus, man. Yeah. And all unfortunately, right. That's the final taste in the mouth.
It is. It is. Ooh, it's so salty.
Oh, Jesus.
So with that, guys, that's actually going to end it for us here on Critique Revolve. We love you all. Thank you all for listening. On behalf of Thomas.
Hello.
And myself. We're going to go ahead and sign off here on Rain Man Digital. Bye-bye.
The Corova Milk Bar sold Milk Plus. Milk Plus Velocet or Synthomesque or Drencrum, which is what we were drinking. This would sharpen you up and make you ready for a bit of the old ultraviolence.